Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 2 to 3 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Jenny, and...
Teal.
Yesenia.
We all attend Laytonville High School. Today our topic is America the Violent. What fuels school shootings? In the last decade, school violence has become a perpetual topic in the media. This month, April 2008, has seen school shootings in Illinois, Indiana, Nebraska, New York, and California. The effects of school violence have been extensive. Many students have been kept at home out of fear. Schools are no longer viewed as safe havens for the nation's children. The increased presence of police, metal detectors, and intervention programs have become daily reminders of school violence. We are going to approach this topic on two fronts today. First, what are the causes of this violence? Can we recognize the sources and do more than place metal detectors at school entrances? Secondly, is the situation as dire as the media presents it? Is a young person in harm's way by just attending school? Is fear overcoming rationality, leading to notions like arming teachers and security consultants selling school equipment and training? The actual odds of a student being murdered at school are around 1 in 2 million. Each murder is a tragedy, but the truth is that there are 75 young people murdered away from school for each one murdered at school. So what fuels school violence? Learning violent behavior can come from a dysfunctional or abnormal home life, perhaps involving domestic abuse or parents who do not respond well to authority figures such as the police. From this type of home environment, youth learn to react to authorities such as teachers or school officials with aggression. Some believe learned violent behaviors also come from repeated exposure to violence in the media such as music lyrics, Hollywood movies, television programs, video games, and 24-hour news stations broadcasting violent or graphic scenes. Studies show that youth exposed to an overwhelmingly amount of such materials become more aggressive and are no longer upset by violence and its consequences. These kids, it is believed, have trouble distinguishing between reality and fantasy. Behavioral problems can be linked to a different personality, which leads to problem of interacting with others, impulsiveness, and being unable to conform. These children may not blend into school activities and become ignored and rebellious. Some become depressed and take medications that can produce serious behavioral side effects. Harshly treated children are more likely to behave violently later in life. Being bullied or teased by others can often lead to a troubled youth to violent revenge or retribution. This factor showed up repeatedly in the school shootings in the 1990s and beyond. Yet another major factor in the rise of deadly school violence is the easy availability of firearms and other weapons. Many schools have adopted zero-tolerance policies, ordering students to suspended or expelled for even the slightest violation of anti-violence rules. The term lockdown moved from prison jargon to standard English, as it became routine to conduct drills in which students imagined armed maniacs in the halls. Money shifted from books and maintenance to metal detectors, cameras, and guards. 1 month after Columbine, a Gallup poll found that 52% of parents feared for their children's safety at schools. 5 months later, that number was almost unchanged at 47%. In the 2006 version of Gallup's annual survey of American opinions about crime, quote, fear for school-aged children's physical safety at school, end quote, was found to be the top crime concern. Thankfully, we attend a school that has not experienced the types of violence that the mass media present as if it were everywhere, and which statistics show is almost non-existent. This is not to say that violence does not exist in our schools, only that the scale is much, much smaller than our media presents. And good arguments can be made that our same media fuels the violence that they later shock us with. What we will discuss now are our thoughts about school violence, where it comes from, and how much we have experienced it. We will discuss these subjects for about 20 minutes, and then open the phone lines for your questions and insights. We are in the Willits studio, so our phone number will be 456-9991. We'll ask you to join in the discussion in about 20 minutes. Let's begin by talking about where violence in young people comes from and how it is expressed. Yessi, have you seen much violence at school?
In Laytonville, not really. Not a lot.
The violence I've seen was more in my freshman year, but the kids that caused the violence, they either got expelled or put on CDS, so they were taken out of the system pretty fast.
Yeah, and do you think that it's the cause of school violence is from bad parenting, or what do you think the cause of all this is from?
I think it starts from bad parenting, or sometimes it depends, like if you were abused when you were a child, either from your parents or family members.
Yeah, I think the background really helps, because if you're a child who's exposed to all these graphically violent video games or violence in your youth, I think that you'd be more inclined to, do those types of acts than children who don't play violent video games in their youth.
Yeah, when they're young, if they see violence a lot, they get used to it and they think it's normal. So when they grow up, I think if you hurt someone, it's not that big of a deal.
I read in a magazine in 2006 of this hit list that this junior made in Riverton High School in Kansas. So the ex-girlfriend of a 16-year-old junior at Riverton High School in Kansas was arrested for a conspiracy in the making of a hit list. And that, quote, and his girlfriend said that, quote, he's got this evil-looking death stare, but he's nice. Those guys are just jokesters, end quote. And she was referring to her ex and his friends who made a hit list and were planning on attacking the school. But, you know, she said they were jokesters, but where do you draw the line for joking? And whether or not her ex was actually going to attack the school, he still threatened to kill people. And is that still considered as a personal prank or a joke? And, you know, there's a fine line between freedom of speech and press and, you know, being an imminent threat to society. And so where do you draw the line? Even if he wasn't going to kill the school, you know, he still threatened to do that.
Well, the question is, what was his cause of making that hit list? So, and also another thing is about bullying. It's like, where do you have, like, the line to bullying? It's like to say, either you bully somebody because it makes you feel better, or you bully somebody because, A, you don't like them, or B, because that's what you've seen all your life.
Do you?
With the bullying, it's kind of funny, though, when you confront the bullies that they're really not that strong. They're just sort of letting their anger out on you. And then if you actually confront them, they'll be like, whoa, I didn't mean it like that.
Mm-hmm. I think lots of bullies, if you let them push you around, then they're going to take advantage of that situation. But if you stand up for yourself, they're going to realize that they can't push you around. And I think lots of bullies, they don't have very much self-confidence in their self, and they feel that by being superior to you, they have more confidence in themselves and what they do.
But do you have, when you're getting bullied, should you run away or should you confront them? Because if you know that they're actually pretty weak and they're just trying to cover up their insecurities, should you just leave them alone or should you confront them?
But then it also depends, because many of the people who, you know how they always say, if someone's bullying you at school, talk to an adult or something. But what about if you keep on telling the adult, and they don't do nothing about it? And then once you take things in your own matter, that's when they say, oh my god, this was bad, and you're not supposed to do this, you're expelled or suspended. It's like, then how is your security at school even working?
Yeah, lots of the time when you're in elementary school or middle school and even high school, if you're being picked on and you go and tell the teacher, everybody knows that you told the teacher, and you're going to get called bad names or, you know, like, because you couldn't take care of it yourself. And you'll be called bad names for going to tell the teacher instead of confronting the bully yourself. And so do you guys feel that that's an option, you know, when you're little, when you're in fifth or sixth grade? do you think that confronting the teacher is a hard thing to do?
Yeah, it is. Because if you go and talk to a teacher, it's like people will see it as if you're weak.
Or else people could, they call you a snitch or a tattletale, and then next thing you know, you're getting beaten up for doing that outside of school grounds or inside.
Yeah. So I'm sure we've all watched television shows and movies where the media promotes violence. And so do you think that the media has the right to show children these violent movies?
I don't think the media knows that the children are watching it. I think it all depends to the parents.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've always got ratings on television shows and stuff, but does that really help? Does that really prevent kids from watching?
No, because even cartoons these days have violence in it.
But not even parents have to see the violence. The violence that are on movies now are so gruesome, no one really needs to see it. It's pretty excessive now.
I mean, you don't really have to see the violence on TV. You can see it at your very own home. Mm-hmm. And that's enough.
Yeah. Well, last year, Laytonville High School had a mock trial team. And mock trial is like a criminal trial where our team prepares a prosecution argument and a defense argument, and we compete with other schools. And Laytonville last year won for the third or fourth time. But anyways, that's not my point. But our fictitious case was on a school bomb threat, and it dealt with a student, a fictitious student named Casey Campbell, who was constantly picked on by this other student named Sawyer Simpson. And the whole case was based on the fact that the 3 days after Casey Campbell drew a violent picture of Sawyer Simpson burning up along with the school, the police found a homemade bomb in a trash can near Sawyer Simpson's lunch table. The police also found a very violent video game in Casey Campbell's video game console called High School Slasher 3. And it was a very graphic and violent video game about school and dealing with school violence. And although it seems like all the evidence points towards Casey Campbell as the culprit, there was actually a lot of evidence in her favor too. But the fact that Casey Campbell had this very violent school-related video game made everyone just point their fingers at her. And do you think that school violent video games and violent video games make school students violent?
Well, the game like Grand Theft Auto, it's all those little kids that play it, they, yeah, kill somebody, but they pop back up. Or it makes them immune to the actual sight of seeing blood, or they don't realize how bad it is in real life.
I remember one of my friends, she said that she used to love playing Grand Theft Auto a lot. It was like something she did once she got back home from school. And she said that one day she was being taught how to drive and she saw an old lady crossing the street. And for some reason, she wanted to run over the lady. So she stepped on the gas and her grandmother didn't know what she was doing. So she stopped her. And my friend said that she had no idea what she was doing. She just like felt like running over the lady. Just like Grand Theft Auto.
Or like what Teal just said, like, do you think that if she had hit the lady, would she have thought that the lady would have popped back up again?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. A survey in 2006 of 1,100 teenagers showed that only 27% of students said that they felt safe at school, while the other 73% said that they felt somewhat threatened. And that's like the majority of students who feel that they aren't safe at school. And, you know, school should be a safe place. So do you guys feel that at Laytonville, because we all attend Laytonville, do you think that we're threatened by these threats that the mass media puts out?
No. It depends on how the minds of the teenagers that are in high school work. Actually, in the minds of any children or teens or young adults work. Because many people can, like, look at violence and say, oh, it's not real. Or others can look at the violence and, like, actually take it in a different step and actually become murderers themselves when they grow up.
Mm-hmm. Well, so going back to our mock trial case, it didn't actually have the verdict, which most of the time, this case was really hard to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Casey Campbell was the culprit. There was just so much evidence pointing to Sawyer Simpson that she was the culprit. And also the availability of the bomb in this fictitious case, it was just a mixture of household items that to create this bomb, you know. And so the availability of weapons, I mean, somebody in chemistry or physics, if they're really smart and if they really knew what they were doing, they could build this bomb. And so it wasn't that the availability was really hard. And so what do you guys think about that?
With gun, I mean, I don't know anything about getting guns or how easy it is, but in Virginia Tech, that guy was really, at that college shooting, he had pretty high quality guns, and it seemed like it was really easy to get guns over there.
I think, should guns be illegal? Like, should anyone have the right to own a gun? Because, I mean, it shows that even policemen take advantage of having that right of owning a gun.
Well, you know, especially in the country, there's a lot of people who go hunting season and hunt, you know. And so I think that they should have the right to own a gun because, you know, not everybody who owns a gun is going to go out and commit a crime. And so, but I think the availability of a gun should be, you know, I don't think that people, just anybody should have a gun. I think the availability is a real problem in the United States as opposed to the availability in Europe.
Well, why not make guns that just stun you or knock you out? Why do they have to kill you? If the cop needs to stop somebody, they don't need to kill them. They can just knock them out.
That's why they have those, taser guns? Yeah. I remember I was watching the news once, and it was about this teenager who, I guess, was running away from the police. And the cop said that he meant to grab his taser gun, and instead he grabbed his real gun and shot the kid 5 times. Oh. And he said that he thought he had mistaken the taser with the actual gun, and instead he ended up killing the kid. And they said they found the cop not guilty. But, I mean, it's not only with guns. It can also be with knives and even house cook things.
What about the gangs and, like, in all the movies they show the Crips versus the Bloods and how they sort of, it influences kids to shoot or think it's cool.
Yeah, lots of the times the media makes things seem worse than they are. When people watch these movies, especially kids, because minors are they can be influenced so easy. They see these gangs and they feel, oh, well, I want to be part of a gang and I want to do the things that the gangs do. And they don't even understand what's going on. And they feel that killing or, you know, doing violent things to people, it isn't, you know, as bad as it really is.
And, you know, not only that, but what about the superheroes? You know how they shoot people and they supposedly are the heroes of the country, but don't they use violence as well? And kids admire them. They, like, look up to them. So what about that?
Yeah.
They never, like, Superman or Spider-Man, they never show blood. It's always them just punching the guy and, like, justice and getting rid of the bad guys.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of like getting even?
Yeah. It's also funny how in movies, good always overcomes evil. And in real life, that's not true. In real life, Superman isn't going to come out and save the day. And so I think lots of the times, children after watching those movies, they feel that anything can be helped because of Superman or because of Batman or whatever. But in reality, that's not what's going to happen.
And then how, like, your parents say, oh, you better be good or else Santa Claus is not going to give you anything. It's like, I don't know how that's related to this topic, but in some way it is. It's like you have to be good in order to get what you want or else you won't get it.
And so I'm going to have to go back to my mock trial case again. But in mock trial last year, I was prosecution pre-trial, so I had the opportunity to look at all these past cases. And one of my reference cases was Interactive Digital Software Association versus St. Louis County, where in 2003 the federal court held that violent video games are a form of protected speech under the First Amendment because our First Amendment protects paintings by Jackson Pollock and music from Arnold Schoenberg. The court held that if we were versatile, if America was versatile enough to protect these under the First Amendment, then we should surely protect violent video games, which was really interesting to me, because do you feel that all art has the same ability to influence minors?
It depends, because there is a difference between video games, art, and music. Because many artists and musicians express their feelings and their passion with the creativity that they do. But video games, what is the point of video games? To entertain somebody?
Well, they make them so addictive that they can't stop, and then they just want to keep playing and, yeah, shooting people or whatever they do.
It's like in the old days, graphical things were books. It's like, oh, you can't read this book. It's too graphic. But now it's like, why can't these... if they could prevent people from reading books, why can't they prevent people from playing sort of video games? Because in these days, all they do is just sit down and stand or sit behind or in front of a TV and play or watch it. And in the old times, which was like sit and read a book or listen to a radio.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that youth who commit these violent crimes should be tried the same way as adults who commit the same crime?
Well, in a point, they should, because if they want to act like an adult and murder somebody, then they should be trialed like an adult. But if they had, they didn't know what they were doing, then maybe they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a different view on that. I feel that, you know, minors, they're just treated different than adults. You know, their brains aren't all, they're not as mature. And so I feel that lots of the times it's just this spur of the moment and anger. And, you know, lots of the times minors don't know what they're doing.
And then it also depends on peer pressure too.
Well, and yeah, when you have all these hormones and your body's totally changing, and then next thing you know, you've done something wrong. But then say you get tried as an adult and then you go to prison, you're a young kid compared to everyone else. It's beefy and 4 year.
Yeah, I think you have a point there, Jenny. Because usually, like, when you get mad with your friend or something, like, you kind of react to it and feel bad about it. And sometimes many of the serial killers now, it's like, they look back and see what they have done, and you don't really care. They actually enjoy it.
What about drugs and alcohol and, like, cocaine and how it changes the personality of people?
Yeah, cocaine and stuff, I feel that it just changes a person completely. I don't think that somebody under the influence of, you know, drugs and stuff, you know, they don't have the same mind as if they did if they weren't using drugs. You know, it's kind of like if you rape someone and you're under the influence of, like, alcohol, is that the same thing as if you commit that same crime and you're not under the influence of alcohol?
But then wouldn't it be the government's fault? Because how easy it is to get the drug.
Yeah, and they sponsor alcohol and cigarettes on TV, totally. Yeah. It's like the little kids are watching it.
And it's like, if the government wants to make money so bad, why don't they try making it in a different way instead of using drugs and alcohol, so that later on they could say, oh, well, it was your fault and this and that and this and that, trying to take the blame off of themselves.
Yeah.
What about on the lockdowns for the schools? Do you think we should be putting our energy into the drills and practicing lockdowns instead of putting our energy into solving the problems?
Yeah, I think you're right. Because why would we try to push the problem to one side if to come up with the solution is to solve the problem?
Yeah, you know, we'll discuss that. Let's see if anybody has any input with that. So we're going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. Please call in if you have questions or insights about school violence. Do you think that schools are a dangerous environment? Should metal detectors be installed at our schools? Should there be armed guards? Would it be a good idea if a few teachers at each school were armed to protect the students against a maniac or a murder spree? What encourages violence in young people? Do you think that our media promotes violence? Should violent movies and TV be curtailed or banned? If you're older than 30, do you think that schools are more dangerous than when you went to school? If you have children at school, do you fear for their safety at the campus? Were you bullied as a child? If so, how did you react? What makes people bully others? Do you think that preparing students to lockdown in case of violence will make students more fearful? So, once again, the phone number is 456-9991. We'd really like to hear from you. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi there. I was listening to your list of questions, which are very appropriate to talk about, but I wanted to add one little thing, other extra thing into the mix. I do a radio program on toxics, and one of the shows I recently did had to do with diet. And I don't know if you folks are aware of this, but there was a school, this all started several years back, a school in Wisconsin, it was sort of like a reform school, mm-hmm. where they had the classic problems with children being violent and not being disruptive, not learning well, et cetera, et cetera. And they hired on a new cafeteria staff, or actually food program, in which they brought in a whole natural food diet, and they eliminated sodas and stuff from their diet. And the children went from when they did their standard notification about what kind of violence was going on, all this kind of categorization that they do, it dropped. It dropped to zero. And they, since then, several other schools have done this kind of thing. And so there's that component of things. It's about the fact that food is a significant contributor to this. It's not the only thing, but it's a significant contributor. But then the other thing was that in the show that I was doing, it had to do with attention deficit disorder, that artificial food colorants, food preservatives, and then some natural foods that we eat, like oranges and aspens and things like this, can contribute to a person's ADD-like behavior or violent behavior, moody, and a whole list of things, earaches, et cetera. So I just wanted to kind of put that into your mix of things. I think it's an important consideration. And one place that people can go to look to get more information about the school things is that it's called school-lunch.org, school-lunch.org. So I think it's part of it, and because it's, I agree. When I went to school, there wasn't this kind of violence going on, and so there's something that's definitely changing. And I think it's a lot of factors, and you definitely hit most of them. So, thank you for your show.
Oh, well, thank you. And the email was, or excuse me, the website was school-lunch.org.
Yeah, www.school-lunch.org.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Caller, you're on the air.
Thank you. I appreciate the show. This is something that I've thought a lot about. I wanted to bring another element into it. It's really the really big picture, and I'd love to hear you comment on it. It's the fact that that we're a military nation. We're at war. It's the tool that our country and our society uses to empower ourselves. And it seems to me on that deeper kind of psychological level, because we're all affected by our society and our family, that particularly in the case of a youth that maybe has a dysfunctional family or is somehow damaged socially at home and comes up, that this is the kind of the way that they're reaching out to empower themselves. So I think the fact that we are, there's sanctioned violence, we're war, we have a huge military establishment that is really crippling our economy, and then there's unsanctioned violence. So I'd like you to comment on that, and if you think that on some level that is, affecting the situation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. That's a really good point. You know, the media also promotes the war and stuff, and everywhere on TV you're always seeing how good the war is, and, you know, it's all this promotion of war, and so...
I think that they promote the military too much. We all know it's out there. And for them to show how, like, they don't, on the commercials, they never mention how you're going to die or how you'll get shell-shocked from seeing people die or whatever. They just show the you being strong and the glory of all.
And not only that, but they also promise things that might or might not even come true. I remember 2 weeks ago, there was this show on the news saying that how many of the militaries and Marines go over to the schools and try to get students into the programs, and how they promise them that they will pay for their college and their schools and books and stuff. But they look at all the things that they're offering, but they never look at the other side of it. Like, what is the war really like? Because, I mean, they give images of what they look like, but once they're there, it's a whole different story.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we were learning about this in history where, I think it was the Korean War, there's this footage of this man just being shot, and it was, and they had this footage, and they had it back in America, and everybody watching it, at, you know, at their dinner table, they were watching it, they were just horrified at this, and, you know, it's just like, they finally realized what was going on, and until then, they were all pro-war, you know, like, let's go out and pay, you know, be very patriotic, and but then once they, you know, had that taste of what war was really like, everybody was just so horrified at that image.
But then isn't it their kids' choice to go to war? I mean, if people who are against the war tell them, no, don't go, it's not what it looks like. And they say, no, it's because of this, because of that. And then they end up suffering and then they regret their choice. Then whose fault really is it?
Back to what you said about the Marines and them coming to our school. Like, they came to our school and a little bit a while ago, and they were telling our students how you'll get that your education will be paid for, and how you'll be, I don't know, you'll be a good guy, you'll serve your country well. And then they actually, I mean, like, some kids are influenced by it. They don't ever hear it. They don't know about the bad side.
Yeah, but As kids, seeing these commercials, hearing this by our brothers, older brothers or sisters, it's like, I don't know how they would see it. I mean, we don't know how a kid's mind works or anything, and it's so hard to think of your little brother or cousin growing up and going to war and not having to live a life. It's like, that's just that.
Yeah. Once again, our phone number is 1-707-456-9991. We'd like to hear from you, and we'd also like to hear your insights and what school was like for you growing up. If you're growing up, you know, when they had the fear of nuclear bomb threats, and did you ever have to do the lockdown? We'd like to hear from you. So now, I mean, growing up now, we don't have those lockdowns, but, you know. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for the show. I'd kind of like to combine those last two comments. I think they're both really apt. And one question, which I don't think you can answer, is, I wonder what the diet of our leaders that bring us into war is like, and maybe that's partly responsible. And the other thing is that I think it's important, wherever we are, to try to work on what we have power over, and we have some power over our government. We can certainly participate in democracy and demonstrations and letter writing and so forth, but I really would think that the school lunch, the food in the schools would be worth looking at, because it's something that one could have much more direct effect on than direct effect on what our empire is doing in the world to maintain its sense of power and so forth. So that's just sort of my comment on the last two calls. I think they're both really, really good observations, but to keep the focus on what we can do, and just wondering what you think about that and how, anyway. Thanks for the show.
Oh, I did have one question. When did you go to school?
Oh, yes. I'm 50, so I went to school in the 70s, 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And There was the usual bullying and picking on. You know, there wasn't, but if there was always a point at which it would stop. I mean, as soon as someone showed you they had more power over you, they'd stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't remember anyone getting beaten, you know, where there was blood or, you know, very much blood or anything like that. And I thought I was picked on a lot, but I picked on these other kids too. So I think it was around, and, you know, we had sugar and junk food back then too, just not as much as we do now. So I don't know if the food was responsible, but I know that, you know, through history, kids are, you know, they're trying to kind of show who's better and who's worse. It's just the level and at which it goes. And it's, I guess it's systemic, you know, with the video games and the diet and the war going on. I mean, this country's always been an empire, at least since I was growing up. We were in Vietnam, you know, we were trying to be dominant over this so-called communist threat. And, you know, I don't think that's really changed. Unfortunately, it's always happened, and unfortunately it hasn't stopped. We hoped it would stop after Vietnam, but it hasn't. So anyway, that's a long answer, but yeah, it was difficult in school, but I don't ever feel like anyone feared for, you know, their life. There were no death threats, for example.
I want to go back to the food thing. Now that you look, when you look at the ingredients of everything, high fructose corn syrup is really mostly in everything we drink now or eat. So our bodies weren't really meant to take in this, like, these chemicals. But they change our hormones, especially when we were a kid. We just can't handle it that much. When everything's got it in there, it's got to be something bad to us.
Oh, caller, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yes, I was calling because one of the things I wanted to interject in the conversation was that person's responsibility.
I'm sorry, caller. There's a lot of static.
Is this any better?
I'm sorry, caller. Call back, please. There was a lot of static. Our number is 456-9991. Caller? Oh. Yeah.
The other caller had a very good point about the school diets.
Yeah. Oh, and caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm not the person that was trying to call a moment ago. I've been listening to your call. I am 36, so that puts me going to high school in the late 80s, which was no fun, let me tell you. Fashion was bad then. But one of the things that, you know, my personal theory of it is that as our world has become more and more complicated, you know, the connectivity that we have with other cultures and other parts of the world, and there's more to know, and the presence of cell phones and the internet and television all the time. And there's more that we have to understand, and as such, it's easier for us to reduce it to categories and generalizations and prejudices and stereotypes. And as a result of that, I think violence becomes objectified, people become objectified, because there's too much for you to understand, so you have to reduce things to a simplification. The person becomes objectified, and I think that results in not just of people, but of situations, of cultural institutions and things that we don't really have any respect for or relation to anymore because we don't understand them. And I think that, in a lot, is the cause of violence, is that people don't connect. They don't feel connected to what they see and experience. And as such, it's easier for them to lash out against it.
I had a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Back then in the 80s when you were going to school, how has bullying changed from your year to now?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to high school right now, so I haven't experienced modern-day bullying. But I think in some ways, it might be a little worse now because there is more conflict in the world. And we, you know, I think youth probably see the world as an increasingly conflicted place where they don't understand how it works. And I think it just makes them feel more confused and more, as you said, I think bullies do bully as a result of feeling powerless and and confused. And so I do. I think it probably has gotten worse. I personally went to a really huge high school. There were 936 students in my school, and so we had so many different kinds of people that there was a lot of inter-clique. I wouldn't call it violence, but bullying and intimidation and catcalling and nasty looks at the lockers. And but it never, I don't remember any real violence. You know, it was never really a part of it, of that I experienced growing up. But, I mean, my whole high school experience was pre-internet. You know, no one had really experienced it at all. And I do think that the increase of computer games and just this, well, we live in a violent culture right now. I mean, we've been at war for, what, 12 years now? I mean, I do. I think it's worse.
Do your kids or did your kids face bullying? And how bad was it?
My kids?
Yeah.
I fortunately do not have kids.
Oh.
Okay, I shouldn't say fortunately. Not yet.
So
yeah, I'm going to get off the line and let other people.
I did have one more question. Mm-hmm. You said that people don't see people as people anymore. Through like cell phones, you mean like things are more impersonal now?
Yeah. I think that's an inevitable result of just how much we're barraged with so much information nowadays. And you've got, you know, I look back at my high school days and I had like, you know, three people that I would count as my friends that I really related with and understood, and because they lived close enough to me that we got to hang out. But nowadays with everybody having cell phones and they have kids having more availability to their own cars, I think that, you know, and the internet, I do think that people's groups are larger. People have more people to relate with and interact with. And so I think you're exposed to more situations, which I think for kids who are, you know, bright and intelligent and motivated and self-aware, largely through good parenting, you know, you can turn that and be, and use it to your advantage that there's so much information in the world and you can learn from it and become a more three-dimensional person. But I do think a lot of people respond to it with fear and end up, you know, lashing out.
So how can we make people more personal now? Caller?
Oh. Well, the one thing I can say is, speaking as an adult, oh, God, I can't. Am I an adult? I don't know. I think a lot of grown-ups, quote-unquote, nowadays, are intimidated by kids, and they don't have relationships with teenagers who aren't their own children. And so I think that that's one thing that for me has always been great, is I really enjoy hanging out with people who aren't in my age group. Mm-hmm. I think it's really great to mix up your peers. And so that would be my recommendation to the listeners, is get to know your local teenagers, because they're, as you can see, you guys are on the radio and you're taking the energy and the care to speak out and make an effort to your community. So I think a lot of people have this prejudice that teenagers are these kind of malevolent, sulking people with earphones on and that, you know, don't want to pay attention to what's important to adults. And I think that my experience of it has been, especially out here on the West Coast, that the youth are our best and brightest hope.
All right. Well, thank you, caller.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, I was just calling because I think it's a real interesting conversation that you're engaging in here. One thing that I wanted to bring up was that of personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we need to use a certain amount of caution when we talk about the drug companies, the alcohol companies, the gun companies, and the government. And instead of kind of saying, geez, what was me and what are we going to do, I think we really need to look at ourselves and how we're you know, the decisions that we're making as people and as parents that kind of determine what kind of kids that we're bringing up. Because really what this boils down to is decision-making and having that personal responsibility. And I think that, you know, one of the things we lose focus on is that, you know, we're one of the only species in the world that has the ability to choose our response. It's not just stimuli, response. But we've got the ability to absorb that stimuli, and then we have the ability to choose our response. And I just think that that's an important part of this conversation.
Do you feel that the media makes children violent, or I mean, everyone for that matter?
You know, I'm not a big fan of the media, and you know, I'm 37. I have two children, 8 and 6, and we rarely have the TV on. You know, for them to watch, and if we do, it's kind of something that we might TiVo, where they, you know, are watching kind of prescribed things. And but you know, we don't just have the TV on, and we certainly don't watch the news a lot because, yeah, it is very violent. There's just not a lot of value to it, at least in my opinion. So. But mm-hmm. I don't just have it on and then complain about the media. I just turn off the TV, and then it becomes a non-issue for us, for my family.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, caller.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. That brings up a good point. You know, you can learn about the news on TV, through the radio, through the newspapers. Which way do you think is more effective for our generation?
Well, you can also learn about it now on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
So the internet really took off now, too.
Mm-hmm. And also Google, and then MSN, yeah, and AOL.
Mm-hmm. Which, once again, our phone number is 707-456-9991. And since we were talking about it, we'd also like to know, where do you learn news from? Do you learn it off of YouTube or newspaper?
I think that our last caller had a good point about responsibility, about making good choices. And I think that goes for anybody, both grandparents, parents, and teenagers to kids.
But, like, it's our own choice, but when they're promoting it so much, it sort of persuades us to say what the media is saying. So I think if they downed on the like alcohol commercials and the cigarette commercials just a little bit, it would be better for our world.
Yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. Wonderful show. Wonderful show. If we took all of that and put it together in one big holistic viewpoint, I think we'd have it together. I work at a school in Ukiah. It's elementary. And I can tell you that the children in the kindergarten use the terms gangster, and he's my enemy. It's a very, very scary situation, and of course they're affected by everything that's going on, and by their older brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. So what do we do? We're trying to teach them. Now we're testing them. This next week they'll be being tested all morning. Entice children to want to learn and to be kinder to each other and take care of the earth. How do we do that?
I had a question for you. How long have you been a teacher?
I'm actually what they call a paraprofessional. I work with learning disabled children.
Oh, okay.
And, but they aren't the ones that I'm seeing the dangerous and violent behavior from.
Mm-hmm.
But kids talk every day about fighting. I think this school is an exception. We call it an energy vortex. If there's anybody out there who works at that school, they probably know I'm talking about our school. But I'm very concerned about the children. I'm 62. I went through the duck and cover days of the nuclear threat from Russia, which was very strange because I grew up in a town where Joe McCarthy was born. If you know who he is, he was a senator who started calling people communists. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather and my father were progressives, so we were, you know, nobody pointed fingers at us, but we were asked in school how we felt about it, and we had to put our heads between our legs under our desks, and every school was considered a fallout shelter, and there were gangs. There were the motorcycle gangs, they call Harleys, Hoods, sometimes, and they got into fights. They didn't have guns. They had knives, maybe chains, but it was a little bit before my time. My older brother, who was very intellectual, wore glasses, carried his books home every day, got a little roughed up one day, but that's pretty much the extent of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, every generation, of course, has their challenges, but I see this as a real recycling of what happened in the 60s to my generation. And I hope that you will all seize this opportunity to have your voices heard and use your creativity and your love, because this is a terrible war, and it could go on for a long time and spread. It's been really secretly going on all over the world for many, many years, consistently. If you look at what happened, has been happening in Central America and South America and all the assassinations, and we're all fearful that more will happen, being, for me, the 40th anniversary of a very pivotal year, 1968. So, you know, we have some things that we can teach you, but you have so much input and so much knowledge that we didn't even come close to having at the same age when we were young. So I just encourage you to use that in a positive way. And do look into who your local teenagers are. I advise adults to do that because I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I have a grandson who will be coming up to the high school this year, and he has a wonderful attitude. He's productive and energetic and creative and likes to be in the plays and the musicals and that kind of thing. So it's a lot of fun for him, but another child who doesn't know how to plug in, it's really scary. And, you know, you see the kids dressing a certain way, and maybe you feel safe. And that's understandable. We just need to make that collecting of children more positive, more creative. You know, I kind of, people laugh about the disco age, but at least they were competing with dancing. the threat. So just keep on doing what you're doing. Great show, and I just think it's wonderful.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this the radio station?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, gee, I thought nobody was home. I'd like to make a point, ask a question.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
About bullying at school,
mm-hmm.
which relates to the subject on the radio.
Yes, and what was your question, caller?
My question would be something like, do you consider bullying a violence? And, well, my goodness, it can go way beyond that. You know, when one kid hits another kid, that's more than bullying.
Yes.
And it happens here at my school. The school that my daughter goes to.
And what school was that?
Leggett School.
Oh. Yeah, well, you know, bullying is a big part, you know, of this, I think, especially in middle school. And did you say she went to middle school?
My daughter doesn't. And she's not a victim.
Oh.
But victims have taken their children out of school to avoid this kind of bullying. And it comes from a small group of boys who have very wealthy parents and think they can do anything they want to.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to the school board or the principal about bullying?
Everybody has.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it's helped?
No.
No.
No. They seem to be unwilling to deal with it in a measurable success kind of thing, you know? They don't even want to try. They just say, oh, that's the way the kids are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you, caller. Oh, one more question. When you were going to school, has bullying increased, do you think?
Absolutely.
Yes.
No question. I mean, I got... I was a very small man in my freshman year, and I got picked on a little bit. But I wouldn't consider it serious, and the next year I was taller than the guys who were picking on me, so they stopped. But this kind of bullying is something altogether different. You may not understand me, you know. These boys are pretty crazed, and their parents, one of whom is a relative of mine, refused to let them be fingerprinted because they injured somebody seriously. And I don't know. Why am I telling you all this? You know, I just wanted to talk on the radio and report that this kind of thing was happening right here in Mendocino County.
Well, thank you, caller.
Okay. You're not going to put me on the air then.
Oh, caller, you are on the air.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, gee, I didn't know that. It's a pretty big deal, you know. It's caused so much pressure in our community that it's put up a divide between the parents who think that this is completely out of line and the parents who think their sons can do no harm.
Yes, and hopefully this will,
You have any words that would help, perhaps, in any way to help this situation, myself and all of the teachers and most of the community would love to see it over.
Yes, hopefully this will help something get done.
Well, thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, once again, the phone number is 1-707-456-9991. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. An interesting show, and I'd like to give a summary of my growing up. My high school was never violent. It was very mild. The closest thing to drugs was to have to see Reefer Madness.
Mm.
And I think the turnaround and the spin happened when Kennedy was assassinated. That was the first real breakup to our shared American dream. I think Eisenhower was totally right on when he said, beware of the military-industrial complex. We went through a social upsurge, which was necessary for social justice, but we're still in the action of that during the 60s with the civil rights movement. We had Martin Luther King assassinated, and with the television showing the Vietnam War, there was a righteous revolution against that, a rebellion against using innocent blood to kill innocent blood. And the hippies or the dropouts or we of the 60s have been still judged for some of our actions then. And what we see right now is the perpetuation even greater of what was happening then. The reason they're getting away with it is that they've been wise enough not to put in the draft. And I think absolutely violence on the screen, it's so bad, I wonder if it's not even designed. If you go back to Brave New World and look at the making of the alpha and the beta and the gamma class, it's almost like they're dumbing down children by allowing these kinds of idiotic shows on television and the amount of violence that little children see. And I would absolutely not want any children watching those kinds of shows. The solution, you're part of the solution. Second is working communities. Third, get the gardens growing. Create our food closer to us. Four, protect your environment. Watch out for your sky, your clear air, your fresh water at all costs because they don't respect it.
Yes. Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
That's all for this month's edition of You Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Yesenia.
Teal.
Jenny.
Thanks to our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willett Studio. You Speak South is produced in cooperation with HALT, Healthy Activities for Laytonville Teens. HALT is a project designed by Laytonville's Healthy Start program. The program is creating many alternative activities for teens in our community. For more information, please contact Healthy Start at 984-8089 or visit their website at www.laytonville.org/healthystart.html. You Speak South is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490, or through the website www.youspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of your show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. That's www.youspeaksout.net. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be on the last Sunday of May, the 25th at 2 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.